You are tuning in to another segment of Politics in Action. I'm Emily, serving you the latest dish on Canadian political news at CJMQ 88.9 FM. Here is a look on this segment's discussion. First, the Quebec Liberals select a new candidate to succeed Pierre Paradis in the Bro-Missisquoi riding, and a look at who the new representative is. Toronto City Councillors downsizing. A call for efficiency or a crack in democracy? Plus, stay tuned for the Canadian government's reconciliation efforts towards Indigenous peoples. And British Columbia is in a state of emergency as wildfires ravage through the province. To begin, here's a look at some local political news. As the Quebec provincial election day is steadily approaching, Quebec ridings will need to know the candidates up for election. For the Bro-Missisquoi riding in the Eastern Townships, the once occupied seat by Liberal MA Pierre Paradis is to be succeeded by another Liberal candidate by the name of Ingrid Marini. Ingrid Marini is the director of a wireless communications company and was formerly the director for the Townshipers Association. Given Marini's past experience, this does demonstrate a smart move considering that Marini encompasses an interest in the Anglo-Quebec population. Approximately 50% of the Lac-Brome municipality is composed of Anglophones. Interesting to note, this has been one of the focuses of the Quebec Liberal Party in hopes they can capture the Anglo vote. Not that they had any difficulty doing so in the past. According to the 2016 Canadian Census, 8.9% of the Quebec's population's mother tongue is English, which makes the composition of Anglophones 9% of the Quebec population. So for catering to a specific demographic, there isn't much bargain for your buck in this case because Quebec Anglophones are evidently a minority among the population. Nonetheless, this move does imply that the Quebec Liberals want to keep its base in the riding of Bro-Missisquoi, and to do that requires cozying up to Quebec's Anglophone population. The riding's current representative provincially, Pierre Paradis, has been the Liberal representative for the region since 1980. But this change in representation was overdue, but done on grounds that it was inevitable. Paradis had recently, in February, lost his position as Minister of Agriculture. This had come on grounds of a complaint filed against Paradis, complaining he had committed unwanted sexual acts towards one employee. Paradis has also been unwell after enduring a concussion related to an equestrian accident. So this move may as well be signifying his retirement from politics. Fun fact, Pierre Paradis is the brother of the federal representative for the Bro-Missisquoi riding, Denis Paradis. So it's interesting to see the Paradis brothers both represent the riding federally and provincially. Despite his recognition in the region as an effective manner of persuading voters, change is good. And by offering a new candidate to represent the Liberals in this riding, they are offering someone with a new face for the riding, which is also strategic when using the right candidate. It will only be after October 1st when we will truly know if this was a smart move on part of the Liberals. It has been a few weeks since Ontario's new premier, Doug Ford, announced he would be making cuts to Canada's largest city, specifically cuts to the number of councillors in Toronto's City Hall. This decision faced immediate backlash from councillors, Toronto Mayor John Tory, and many other respective Ontarians. Despite talks of taking this matter to court, it looks as though Ontario's premier has spoken. The legislation to cut the amount of Toronto City Councillors had officially passed last week, making it official under Bill 5, the Better Local Government Act. But despite this, A court challenge is expected by the end of the month. The main argument put forward in the Court of Appeal being the province had exceeded its constitutional authority. In other words, the premier had done more than he had been permitted to do. As well, there is the underlying matter, and what Mayor Tory had been arguing is the fact that there was no input provided by the citizens of the municipality or the councillors themselves. Now that I have underlined the basics of this action, I want to permit a discussion of democracy, as it is surely a relevant component to this debate. Supporters of Ford's decision would argue, well, in a typical democracy, the word of the democratically elected, in this case a majority government, is the word of the representative. In other words, the people of Ontario have to accept the decisions on part of the premier, having voted him in. Of course, in any healthy democracy, it is relevant to challenge the government on decisions that are otherwise questionable. This is one instance. This goes with saying, despite having elected an individual into any government, you are in your own liberty to denounce some of the policy positions or general positions they take on given issues. Ergo, Toronto City Councillors are in their liberty to challenge Ford in the court of law. If we are to rewind back to the election campaign period, Ford did campaign on the promise to resolve efficiencies in the areas needed. One interesting promise, and this comes from the Premier himself, was to cut $6 billion in governmental inefficiencies without laying off governmental employees. The problem lies with what qualifies as the inefficiencies. In this case, Ford perceived the inefficiencies relied in the councillors themselves, so he essentially did lay off half of the Toronto City Councillors as a result of this. I might add how interesting it is that Premier Ford had stated city councillors were ineffective in making decisions, but his move here made the councillors relatively agree on one thing. Cutting the number of councillors is a bad move. In regards to the court challenge, I do not believe it will amount to much. It is definitely beneficial on part of the councillors to pursue a challenge, but I do believe the court will resolve that the premier has spoken and that's it, that's all kind of resolution. With the upcoming municipal election for Toronto City Councillors, outgoing city councillors will long for the next provincial election to come sooner. It is a well-known fact that the Trudeau government has made it a priority to make efforts of reconciliation with Indigenous peoples. A recent development on this front was establishing a new statutory holiday designated to remembering the impact of residential schools on Indigenous communities then and now. This holiday has yet to solidify a date to be observed, but is in current discussion. Recall that residential school systems began in Canada in the 19th century, and the last residential school to close was in 1996. So we can say that reconciliation is a recent effort made by the Canadian government since then. The purpose of residential schools was to assimilate Indigenous peoples into the Canadian way of living, to rid of their culture and traditions and forget their languages. The effects of residential schools included mental distress, loss of identity, loss of cultural, among the list of consequences, which are effects thought to be intergenerational, meaning they would last for centuries. Some of these effects are seen today. For example, some Indigenous youth not knowing their own culture because their grandparents were told not to teach it and subsequently resolved in the generations following not being taught their own culture. While creating a statutory holiday on behalf of Indigenous peoples is a relevant gesture on part of the Canadian government, it has not come without some doubts that making a holiday will truly make a difference. One dilemma faced with the implementation of this new holiday is the fact that the provinces will ultimately have the final say whether or not they will choose to observe this holiday. For instance, Saskatchewan Premier Scott Moe has expressed that he isn't certain whether or not the province will observe the holiday. His reasons are due to the matter of how it will affect employers. As you know, whenever Canada has a statutory holiday, this impacts employers in the sense that they are obliged to count this as a paid holiday. As Canada already has dozens that are observed both nationally and some provincially, this represents a loss of production and a loss of revenue given they have to pay employees all the same. Nonetheless, Moe has affirmed that his decision to not observe the holiday would not mean that he doesn't support Indigenous rights. His reasons are more systematically concerned. Additionally, concerns are directed towards the matter that making this day a holiday would simply be another day off for Canadians without any further thoughts for what the day represents. This is typically what happens when there is any cause to have a statutory holiday. Consider earlier this year, the federal government wanted to make Remembrance Day a statutory holiday for all Canada. Veterans were concerned the issue would be swept under the rug and that Canadians would think of it as just another day off. This is why some provinces decide not to observe the holiday altogether. The same concerns are rising here with enacting a statutory holiday for remembering Indigenous students of residential schools and the abuses they endured. This attempt would have been a symbolic gesture, but much more work is to be extended into other areas for a reconciliation to be achieved. The impacts of residential schools continue to resonate with some Indigenous communities as a painful part of their history. In 2008, Stephen Harper had delivered an official pardon to all victims of residential schools in Ottawa. But an apology alone does not make up for generations of disrespect and maltreatment. This means that reconciliation efforts will take much more time to be achieved. There is even a debate whether or not it can be fully achieved, because Canada cannot take back what it had done in the past. This ultimately means that Canada will always have blood on its hands for the some Indigenous students who died or were harmed throughout the residential school period. The number of Indigenous children that passed away at the hands of residential schools is speculated, but is a number that is speculated to be even greater than as recorded. That alone tells me that Canadians and Canada as a whole do not realize how bad the residential school system was. To me, reconciliation can only be achieved once the reality of how badly we treated Indigenous peoples is fully realized. I will end my segment with a brief discussion on the BC wildfires. The province has been classified as being in a state of emergency for a few days, with assistance being flown in from exterior parties to help extinguish the flames. Among the locations assisting BC include the provinces of Quebec and the Northwest Territories, Mexico, and New Zealand. To grasp an idea of how severe the situation of wildfires is in BC, I recommend consulting the interactive map online, which demonstrates the current active fires and other elements pertaining to the fire, such as the control status, whether or not the fire is maintained or out of control. According to sources, the damages ensued by the fire to date is an estimated $257 million. As headlines are constantly reading BC classified as being in a state of emergency, you're probably wondering, what are the requirements in order to be classified as a state of emergency? By declaring a state of emergency, BC is calling for resources and aid it would not otherwise have in normal circumstances. A state of emergency is issued when a given state is unable to deal with a disaster on its own. This is why firefighters from alternative locations have been flown in to help with the disaster, because BC is incapacitated and the severity of the forest fires has overridden the amount of firefighters in BC to fight it. It is definitely utilizing the province's resources to full capacity. I'll provide you an example to demonstrate what I mean. Consider how firefighters are focusing their efforts into extinguishing the wildfires instead of being ready on call to respond to residential fires. So the wildfires are really exhausting the resources of employing firefighters. Prime Minister Justin Trudeau has promised BC that it would not go through this alone, and promising to provide aid to the province, both in terms of financial and resources. It is a worrisome experience for BC, not only for residents, but for the land that they appreciate, now threatened by a fiery catastrophe. It has been a difficult year so far for the province of BC. First, it had been in the face of a debate regarding the extension of the Kinder Morgan pipeline, of which Alberta has been its main opposition, and fighting the extension has exhausted some time and resources already. Now with the wildfires, of nature and not as easy to control, is another event that has gone wrong for BC. It is a challenge that BC is finding difficult to overcome. Thank you for listening to another segment of Politics in Action. I hope you appreciated the discussion. Tune in for more discussions weekly. I'm Emily with CJMQ 88.9 FM.